You Forever by Tuesday Love Sang Grandpa, read to you by Blue Friend, September 2016. Lesson 27. We are going to bring our old friend, the subconscious, to the forefront, because the relationship between the conscious mind and the subconscious mind offers an explanation as to why hypnotism works. We really are two people in one. One of these people is a little person, a ninth the size of the other, an active little person who likes to interfere, likes to be bossy, likes to control. The other person, the subconscious, is likened to an amiable giant without reasoning power, for the conscious mind has reason and logic, but no memory. The subconscious mind cannot use reason and has no logic, but it is the seat of memory. Everything that has ever happened to a person, even things that happened before birth, are retained within the subconscious, and under suitable types of hypnosis, that memory can be released for consideration by others. One might say, for the purpose of this illustration, that the body as a whole represents a very large library. In the front office, or in the front desk, we have a librarian. Her chief virtue is that, while she may not know much about different subjects, she will know instantly the books which contain the desired information. She is adept at consulting filing cards and then producing the book with desired knowledge. People are like that. The conscious mind has the ability to reason, often incorrectly reasoning too, and it is able to exercise a form of logic, but it has no memory. Its virtue is that when trained, it can stir up the subconscious so that the latter provides information stored in the memory cells. Between the subconscious mind and the conscious mind, there is what we might call a screen, which effectively blocks off all information from the conscious mind. It means that the conscious mind cannot just probe around in the subconscious at any time. This, of course, is absolutely necessary because one would eventually contaminate the other. We stated that the subconscious had memory but no reason. It will be clear that if the memory could be combined with reason, then some facets of information would be distorted because the subconscious, with the power of reasoning, might in effect say, "Oh, that is ridiculous. That can't possibly be. I must have misread the facts. Let me alter my memory bank." So it is that the subconscious is without reason, and the conscious is without memory. We have two rules to remember. One is, the subconscious mind is without reason, therefore it can only act upon suggestion as given to it. It can only retain in the memory any statement, true or untrue, which is given to it. It's not able to evaluate whether that information is true or false. And rule number two is, the conscious mind can only concentrate upon one idea at a time. you will readily appreciate that all the time we are receiving impressions, forming opinions, seeing things, hearing things, touching things, and if the subconscious mind were unprotected, then everything would pour in, and we would have our memories cluttered with quite useless information, frequently incorrect information. Between the subconscious and the conscious minds, there is a screen which can block off those matters which have to be considered by the conscious before they can be passed on to the subconscious for filing. The conscious mind, then, limited to considering one thought at a time, selects the thought which appears to be the most important, examines the thought, accepts or rejects it in the light of reason or logic. You may complain that this cannot possibly be so because you personally can think of two or three things at once. But that is not the case. Thought is very quick indeed, and it is an established fact that thought changes even faster than a lightning flash. So although you may consciously think that you have two or three thoughts at once, careful examination by scientists prove that only one thought can occupy the attention at one time. We should make it clear that, as we've already stated, the memory banks of the subconscious mind hold a knowledge of everything that has ever happened to that particular body. This conscious threshold or screen does not prevent the entry of information. Everything pours into the subconscious memory, but information which has to be scrutinized by the logical, reasoning brain is held back until such time as it has been evaluated. Let us see then how hypnotism works. The subconscious mind has no power of discrimination, no power of reasoning, no power of logic. So if we force a suggestion through the screen, which normally exists between the conscious and the subconscious, we can cause the subconscious to behave as we want it to. If we concentrate conscious attention upon a single thought, then we increase the suggestibility. If we put the thought to a person that they will be hypnotized, and they believe that they will be hypnotized, then they will be, because that screen is then lowered. Many people boast that they can't be hypnotized, but they boast about it rather too loudly. In denying their susceptibility to hypnosis, they are merely intensifying their susceptibility, because again, in any battle between the imagination and the will, the imagination always wins. People may will themselves not to be hypnotized. It is then as though the imagination rises up in wrath and says, "You jolly well will be hypnotized." And the subject goes under almost before he knows that anything has happened. Of course, you know how one becomes hypnotized. It will not harm us, though, to go into it again. The first thing to do is to have some method of attracting a person's attention so that the conscious mind, which can hold only one thought at a time, is held captive, and then suggestions can creep in to the subconscious. Usually, the hypnotist has a bright button or a piece of glass or some other gimmick and he asks his subjects to consciously focus the attention upon that glittering object, and to focus the attention unwaveringly upon that object. The whole purpose of this, we repeat, is to so engage the conscious mind that it cannot perceive that certain workings are taking place behind its back. The hypnotist will hold an object just above the eye level, because in looking up to that level, a person's eyes are put in an unnatural position of strain. It strains the muscles of the eyes and the eyelids as well, and the eyelid muscles are quite definitely the weakest muscles in the human body, and they tire more quickly than does any other muscle. A few seconds and the eyes tire, they begin to water. It is a simple matter then for the hypnotist to state that the eyes are tired and that the person wants to sleep. Of course, he wants to close his eyes because the hypnotist has just thoroughly tired those muscles. Deadly monotony in repeating that the eyes are tired bores the subject and knocks down the guard or the awareness of the subject. Frankly, he's thoroughly bored with the whole affair and feels that he would gladly sleep to have something different to do. When this has been done for a few times, the suggestibility of the subject has been increased. That is, he's forming the habit of becoming hypnotically influenced. So, when a person, the hypnotist, says the subject's eyes are becoming tired, the subject accepts that without the slightest hesitation, because previous experiences have proved that the eyes did become tired under those conditions. Thus, the subject places more and more faith in the statements of the hypnotist. The subconscious mind is quite uncritical. It is not able to discriminate. So if the conscious mind can accept the proposition that eyes become tired when the hypnotist says so, then the subconscious will also agree that there shall be no pain when the hypnotist says so. In that case, a hypnotist who knows his job can see that a woman has completely painless childbirth, or can see a patient have a dental extraction without any pain or any discomfort even. It's a simple matter indeed, and it needs merely the slightest practice. The whole thing then is that a person who is going to be hypnotized has accepted the statements of the hypnotist. In other words, the subject was told that his eyes were becoming tired. His own experience proved to him that his eyes were becoming tired. He was told by the hypnotist that he would feel much ease if he closed his eyes, and when he did close his eyes, he did feel ease. A hypnotist always has to make sure that his statements are thoroughly believed by the person being hypnotized. It's useless to tell a person that he's standing up when obviously he's lying down. Most hypnotists only tell the subject of a certain thing after the thing has been proved. For instance, the hypnotist may tell the subject to stretch out his arm at full length. He will repeat it in a monotonous voice for some time, and then, when he sees that the subject's arm is becoming tired, he will say, "Your arm is becoming tired. Your arm is feeling heavy. Your arm is becoming tired." The subject can readily agree to that remark because it's self-evident that he is becoming tired. But in the light trance state, he's not in a position to say to the hypnotist, "Well, you idiot, of course it's tired, as I'm keeping it out like this." Instead, he just believes that the hypnotist has some certain power, some certain ability, which can make him do whatever is ordered. In the future, it will be that doctors and surgeons will resort more and more to hypnotic methods because there is no after effect with hypnotism. Nothing painful, nothing at all disturbing. Hypnotism is natural, and almost every person is susceptible to hypnotic commands. The more a person asserts that he or she cannot be hypnotized, the more easy it is to hypnotize that person. We are not concerned with hypnotizing other people, however, because, unless in highly trained hands, it can be a highly dangerous thing. We are concerned in helping you to hypnotize yourself, because if you hypnotize yourself, you can get away from bad habits. You can cure yourself of weaknesses. You can raise your temperature in cold weather and do a lot of useful things like that. We're not going to teach you how to hypnotize others because we consider it to be dangerous unless one has years of experience. There are certain factors about hypnotism which we are going to mention, though, and in the next lesson we'll deal with self or auto-hypnotism. It is said in the West that no person can be hypnotized instantly. Well, that is incorrect. Any person can be hypnotized instantly by one who's been trained in certain Eastern methods. Fortunately, few Westerners have been so trained. It is also stated that no person can be hypnotized and compelled to do a thing in opposition to their own moral code. Here again, that is false. It is absolutely false. One could not go up to a righteous, good-living man, hypnotize him, and say, "Now you go out and rob a bank." The subject wouldn't do it. He would just wake up instead. But a skillful hypnotist can so phrase his commands and his words that the hypnotized subject believes that he's taking part in a play or a game. It's possible, for instance, for a hypnotist to do very wrong things to another person. All he has to do is, by suitable chosen words and suggestions, persuade the subject that he is playing. We do not propose to deal any more with this particular aspect of it, because hypnotism is truly a shockingly dangerous thing in unscrupulous hands and in untrained hands. We suggest that you have nothing whatsoever to do with hypnotism unless it be treatment under the care of a reputable, highly experienced, highly trained medical practitioner. In dealing with auto or self-hypnotism, if you follow our instructions, you cannot harm yourself, and you cannot harm anyone else. On the contrary, you can do a lot of good for yourself, and perhaps for other people too. End of lesson 27.